there were a number of reasons. The among them, it's difficult to say a number of reasons because one might argue that the call from Yale would be so attractive to a historian that anyone would go. But in fact, Dick was not that anxious to go to Yale. He would have remained if a position had been open for his wife, who was a dancer. But the state was not interested in opening such a position, and that became decisive, particularly since there were possibilities for such a position at Yale. I'm not certain if they actually worked out for David.
I heard about him, but I came after he left. How long do you think it took for the two sides that had developed in Oyster Bay to bury the hatchet and get on with the job at Stony Brook?
Several years. And indeed, every so often one can see evidences of the old hostility emerge.
Really?
After all these years. But of course, what finally solved the problem of the earlier division, that is, essentially solved it, even though elements of the earlier division remained, as I said, was the even greater divisions induced by the difficulties in the late 60s and early 70s, divisions growing out of the student and faculty reactions to the Vietnam War. These two persist within various departments.
In what ways?
Well,
can you describe it?
Pardon? Oh, yes. Departments were divided at that point. A comparatively small minority in each department found itself in a position that could only be called less radical.
They were in a minority.
Very much so.
I see.
Determined to maintain, among other things, some semblance of the old program. And these political divisions are still remembered. So far as the history department is concerned, along with departments throughout the country, this is hardly unique to Stony Brook, survey courses, the History 1 and 2 type courses, were tossed overboard. A few of us attempted to save them, but as I recall, when I spoke in favor of the survey course, there was only one person who joined me.
Who was he, remember?
I'm afraid I prevaricated on that score. I didn't want to present myself as the only honest man on campus. I certainly can't think of anyone who joined me on that score.
I see.
Nor, for the record, do I think of myself as the only honest man. Perhaps I'm simply an old-fashioned man, but I do note that there's a move back to the survey courses throughout the country. Yeah, it's the mood at the time was an overpowering one. It was largely right-thinking people, as they define themselves, opposed survey courses. It went with denouncing the Cambodia intrusion and opposition to the draft and so on. It seemed impossible to suggest that one could oppose the Vietnam War and still favor the survey course. And as I say, this wasn't simply Stony Brook. throughout the country, divisions of this sort and along very similar lines occurred.
What about the quality of the people, of the faculty, that were appointed, let's say, between 62 and 70 or 71?
It varied. There were some very good people, and some that weren't quite so good, and these, generally speaking, have left for one reason or another. This was a difficult time. As you know, universities were expanding throughout the country, and it was not that easy to get good faculty to come to a university that, to outward appearances, was a construction lot. People would come to Stony Brook and be rather
turned off. Yeah.
We did, despite this, we did very well.
You want to set, well, let's see, you want to say some of the people in the department?
Yes.
Angus, for instance, from Canada.
Yes.
From Berkeley.
Yes. This is now, we're speaking of what period? From 62 to...
Yes, I was thinking of starting on the Stony Brook campus. 62 is when we went out.
Right,
there.
To the present. Or
yes. Well, yes.
Oh, to 70.
71. I picked 71 because Bentley and I both left administration.
Mm-hmm. The Angus, as you say, I probably will be very deficient in noting all the people. Having had a full meal, I will probably leave a number out. But Eric Lampard and Bill Taylor came from Wisconsin. Bill had previously been at Harvard.
Anybody in economics?
Ed Ames may have come at about that time. I think he's one of the people who've been much undervalued by the university and by his department. A brilliant man with a knowledge of many fields of economics, not at all the narrow specialist.
Quantitative.
Mm-hmm. He did quantitative work as well, but he went rather far beyond that. And in addition, during that period, this is when, as I recollect, Roventhal came, and Leibowitz, and a good many other people. I don't mean to be invidious, and it's just a question of what puffs to my mind.
Has there been any outside estimate of the quality of departments other than the estimates that have been made of the sciences?
Well, yes. I think I can even provide a date on this, if this is what you have in mind. We were in England in 1974-75, and I believe it was at this time that, at the behest of the central headquarters of the university, a committee was appointed to survey history departments, not only throughout the graduate centers of the state university, but in the private sector as well. And as I recollect, after having gone through them all, the universities that were regarded as the best, that is, the history departments which were regarded as the best, and there were very few which were mentioned, included Stony Brook, NYU, the Graduate School of the City University, Columbia. Now, as I remember it, that was it.
Those four.
Yeah. One was surprised, for example, as to why Rochester wasn't among those mentioned. You see. Now, it was either in the fall semester of 74 or the spring semester of 75 that this survey was made, as I recollect.
There were some unfavorable comments about Albany, Albany's history department at
yes.
some point, I don't remember.
Yes, well, Albany there was a time when Albany was even denied, as I recollect, a PhD program.
Yes, I think so.
Now, it had a master's program, but not a PhD program. But,
when did the history department get its PhD program?
Now, the first year in which we admitted graduate students was in 1966, as I remember.
That would be the MA then.
I think at that time we had the possibility of both the MA and the PhD, but of course we only admitted at that point MA students.
Did you have any relations with the central office yourself off campus? Any institutions off campus?
Nope.
Did you hold any offices in the American Historical Society, for instance, or?
Yes, I've just completed a term as a member of the professional division, as it's called. It's a professional division committee of the American Historical Society.
Just now?
Just this past
year.
1986.
Three-year term?
A three-year term, mm-hmm.
What do you feel that you had accomplished at Stony Brook by 1971, for instance?
In terms of my own work?
Your own work, your own teaching?
Any
faculty committees?
Oh, I was rather active, as a matter of fact, on faculty committees.
Let me have.
In the 60s, I was a member of the executive committee, for example. I think I mentioned that I was chairman of the department between 66 and 69. I served as a member of the grievance committee, though I'm not quite sure whether that was before 71 or after 71. I was a member of the, well, what was then called the Promotion and Tenure Committee.
What is it now?
I'm afraid I still call it Promotion and Tenure, but it has another name. As far as university service up to that point, I think that may be it.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you name individuals who did things that were important for the future development of the university as a whole, or some part of it? See, one purpose of any history, if it is to be written,
right,
is to try to explain how the university was developed to its present stature, by what steps, and if there are individuals involved.
Well, Stanley Ross, of course, played a very important role in the university as dean. I don't think there's any question of that. And as importantly was Carl Hartzell, who at a very difficult time of the university's existence came as a stabilizing force, a man who was able to create bridges between different groups, and who acted as well as a force for sobriety and sanity when the dean, Stanley Ross, who for all his virtues, when the dean sometimes went off on a deep end. I think that Johnny Toll was an important influence on the university. There have been complaints made about his being more interested in construction than in the curriculum. And to some extent, these complaints are justified. But it was a time when construction was of the first urgency.
Order of priority.
And one can only be thankful that he proceeded as he did, if only because it has made it possible for the university not to resemble a construction lot before I retire.
Make any comments about the relative balance within the university as between the sciences, social sciences, and the humanities in any form?
Well, I think this is one of those areas in which Johnny Toll might have failed the university. The administration was much more interested in advancing the sciences than it was in advancing the humanities or the social sciences.
Would you say that one reason was that was what it knew how to do best?
I suspect that's it. But I think in addition, there was a disrespect on the part of the sciences for what they considered the soft subjects of the other two branches of the university. The sciences felt that they were making a grander contribution to the financial health of the university because the National Science Foundation was delivering great pockets of support for work in the sciences. The humanities and social sciences don't have these possibilities, and it was presumed that, therefore, they were less valuable.
Was there anybody in Albany who could have helped to write the balance? Anybody stand out in your mind in Albany?
I'm afraid I really didn't have any grand insight into what was happening at Albany. In Albany, I couldn't give you names. I had a better sense of that in the early year or two of the university.
Sam Gould doesn't you any picture, or
if I knew more about what was occurring in Albany, I no doubt would know whether Gould acted well or poorly. I simply don't know.
Yes. Yeah. And the same for Ernest Boyer, probably.
Very much the same.
Yeah. Or Horton?
I knew that they were in office, but I had no way of knowing how supportive they were for Stony Brook or for any of the programs that I considered valuable at Stony Brook.
Did the history department or the economics or political science departments run any invitational conferences that you were aware of?
Yes, but I don't think I could tell you about any of them.
I see. What about the future of the institution? How do you feel about it now? Future Stony Brook.
I feel relatively sanguine about the future of the institution. I'm pleased to learn that there's a faculty club in the works, but
in the pipeline.
In the pipeline, but for example, I would feel more pleased about the future if library funds were adequate, more adequate than they have apparently been during the last several years.
They've cut down on them?
They have. And I think, despite all I've just said, this is a mixed statement in that if I had been asked in 1960 what position the university would have in American academic life by 1987, I would have thought that we would be much further ahead of the game.
Than we are.
Than we are, much further ahead of the game. I would hardly have believed that we would have achieved the status of Berkeley of the East, but I would have thought that we were poised for such a leap. I don't believe we are as things stand.
And why do you think we are not?
Well, I suspect that in large part we are suffering from the disease that all academic life in America has suffered from in the last generation, a readiness to accept mediocrity at every level. I by no means want to suggest that we are a mediocre institution or that the faculty is mediocre, but nonetheless, the readiness to accept whatever happens to be about. I'm particularly unhappy with the student body, the undergraduates. The graduates, we've been very lucky in the history department. We have a very good set of graduate students. Why we have done so well in the last several years, I can't say, but we have done very well. But the undergraduates that I've taught in the last 4, 5, 6 years are a hopeless bunch. Most of them oughtn't to be in college. This doesn't mean that there aren't among the undergraduates very good people. There are. I don't mean to condemn them all, but this most recent generation of undergraduates is ill-prepared, essentially interested only in getting a degree so that they can get out and get a job. They don't read. They're humorless, which of course is self-serving. It means that in past years, undergraduates have laughed at my jokes more readily than undergraduates today seem to. They sit and they take notes very assiduously. They can't write. They don't contribute to class. Really, it's a very bad situation. What prevents me from saying that this makes the future at Stony Brook absolutely dismal is my recognition that all these questions are relative. And from what I gather, virtually everything I've said could be said by faculty members in institutions throughout the country, and not only state universities, but with many privileged private institutions.
Where do you get your information?
From colleagues at other institutions in some cases, and in other cases, I've been on a number of visiting committees. I won't say where, but in fact,